All right, we're going to take a look at a seemingly, not trivial, but seemingly unexciting passage in the middle of the Parsha, which is famous more because of the other place it shows up, where it's different. A very famous Rashi that many, many school children have learned, and so has everybody else, at the very beginning of Parsha Shmot. Beginning of Parsha Shmot, you see it on your paper on the back, you see source 4 lists Shmot Bnei Yisrael by Mitzrayim, and it lists the 11 sons, and then it mentions Yosef is in Mitzrayim, and it says that the whole group was 70. And the very famous Rashi quote in the Midrash says, why did he count them when they were alive, and why did they count them dead? It shows how much Hashem loves Bnei Yisrael. It's all very beautiful. And then the enterprising student at that point will say, what are you talking about? When did he ever count them when they were alive? And he'll turn back to our Parsha. But our Parsha is the less famous one, but it's far more detailed. And our Parsha brings up a whole host of questions, which in honor of Jason, I actually wrote into the source sheets. my mom's yahrzeit is this Shabbat, so Lili Nishmat, Imi Morati Miriam, Bat Yitzchak V'Rivka, Zichra Livracha. The list, thank you, the list that you see, which is all of page one, has some numbers next to it in seasonal colors. and
where is this?
What? Where is this? This is the middle of our Parsha Vayigash. Yeah, right. So when Yaakov comes down to Egypt, we are given this list. And there's lots of individual problems with the list. If you look at the numbers on the side, they are generational numbers. The red numbers are the sons of Yaakov, or children of Yaakov. The green numbers are the grandchildren. And in a couple places, we have one place, we have a purple number, two places, we have purple numbers, which are great-grandchildren, just to get a sense. Now, one of the famous problem with this list is that the list claims a number at the end, which isn't the total of amount of people on the list, right? Well, maybe. But there are other problems with this list. All right, so I'd like to go through the list, take a look at it. We'll just read quickly through, and along the way ask the detailed questions. And then there's a larger question, I think, that's in back of this whole piece. Okay, so the first thing is that we're told these are Shmot Bnei Yisrael. Right? And who are Bnei Yisrael? The first one is Reuven. For some reason, Reuven here still retains, as he did in Vayishlach, retains pride of place. And he even will in Shmot. All right, which itself is a little bit of a question. Bnei Reuven, Chanochu Falu Chatzor Mecharmi. Now stop at that point and ask. We're given the list of Reuven's sons. Are Reuven's sons alive at the time, or they're not yet born?
We don't know.
If we assume that they are listed because they're alive already, then that means we think we're getting a complete list of all the people who came down. And so therefore we're saying Reuven and his four sons came down. We are immediately noting that Reuven's wife is not mentioned. And for that we have a very simple solution, which is that at the end of the list it says these are Yotzei Yerech Yaakov, the bloodline. Right, and when we're told later on that this does not include the wives, there's only a bloodline that we get. But if we're going to posit that Reuven's four sons are all alive at the time, so this is now a list of everybody who's stamped on the Misrad HaPnim registry as having come in, it's going to leave us with a little bit of a problem. Reuven is how much older than Binyamin? The man Reuven is how much older than Binyamin?
25 years.
Maybe less than that, but more close to a generation older. Correct? Okay. Now, on this list, as we'll see later on, Binyamin has 10 sons. Now, if you're going to tell me, and you can, that Binyamin at this point is married and has 10 sons, and that Reuven at this point has 4 sons and no grandsons, it's possible, but it's a little odd. Now, none of that breaks this, but it's just a little bit strange. If, on the other hand, you want to tell me that Reuven doesn't necessarily have these kids yet, and Benjamin doesn't necessarily have those kids yet, then why are they listed? So you can say, well, I want to list all of the eventual sons, because, of course, by the time this list is presented to us, all of these people are long dead. So we know who's going to be who.
Why isn't Moshe listed then?
What?
Why isn't Moshe Amram? Why isn't, like,
no, in other words, well, clearly the line goes no further than great grandchildren. That's
Shvatim,
clear.
It's Shvatim.
But Shvatim and what? That's right. The problem. So possible? The beginning of Shmot, of course, is just the Shvatim.
Is it possible that not all his kids came down with him?
So, meaning either that some of these kids stayed back in the famine to die in Canaan, maybe not.
Stayed back, died, whatever, something happened.
Or to say that, so you're saying that all of these kids were alive at the time, but not all of them came? Well, the text says the exact opposite about that. These are the ones who came down, and we're counting the ones who came down, and these are the count.
Right. So this is not; these are not all of Reuben's children. These are the
You're saying Reuben has kids, Reuben has grandchildren, and everything else, but the ones who came down are just these four.
Right.
Which means what happened to the other ones?
Yeah, whatever. But it dispels the notion that this is difficult to understand. Why does Binyamin have 10 children? Reuben only has 4.
Right.
Reuben actually has 15 and grandchildren.
Right.
They just didn't come down.
They just didn't come down.
Because
possibly
their children are much more established, etc.
And so they just stayed back. They didn't come down with the family. They've already kind of gone their own way. Whereas Binyamin's kids are younger, and therefore they all come down. Certainly possible. It's going to become a little difficult in what we read, but it's a certainly interesting theory. And then we have Bnei Shimon. And I'll notice that when it came to Reuven, Reuven got his own mention. Bechor Yaakov Reuven, here are the sons of Reuven. Shimon does not get his own mention. And don't think that that's necessarily a punishment, as we're going to see later, Shimon and Levi getting kind of racked out by Yaakov, because we'll see other brothers who are not disfavored who also get that. So you have to look at the exception to the rule is Reuven. Reuven singled out. You could say Bechor Yaakov Reuven, maybe, right? Bnei Shimon, Yimuel, V'yamin, V'awad, V'yachin, V'tzochar, V'sha'ul ben HaKna'anit. Now, what does that mean, Sha'ul ben HaKna'anit?
He had a few life and mother.
So it sounds like Shimon had one wife and he had 5 kids, and then he had another kid with another wife, or a Pilegesh or whatever, or some interaction, who was the Kananit. And the Midrashim have a lot of fun with this, somehow even throwing Dina into the mix here, not as the wife, but into the mix. All right, Uvnei Levi. Now, this list we know, and this list is very important to us. Gershon Ukatu Merari. So, if I only had that list, I would say, oh, I know that list. That's very important. And that's the 3 families of Levi, and they're critical for the Mishkan and everything else. I get that, but then I'll go back and say, what do I care about the different families of Shimon? All right? It gets stranger. Uvnei Yehuda, and again, Yehuda, who is a favored son, does not get his own mention. It's just Bnei Yehuda. Er v'onan v'shelav aferetz v'zarach. So Yehuda had 5 sons. Okay. By the way, Peretz and Zarach are also ben ha-Kananit, sort of. Right, Tamar. All right. V'yamot er v'onan be'eretz Kanan v'yu b'nei feretz chetzon v'chamol. As a matter of fact, you could say about all of Yehuda's kids, they're ben ha-Kananit, because who does he marry? Bat ish Kanani. His father-in-law's name is Shua ha-Kanani. All right, so you want to say Kanani doesn't mean a Kanani, means a Tiger. Yeah, the simple pshat is that Yehuda's wife is also a Kananit. All right. Then we're suddenly told that Aaron Onan, and by the way, Arya, this may hurt a little bit with your theory, we're told that Aaron Onan died in Eretz Canaan, and then we're told about great-grandchildren, Chetzron and Chamul, who are Peretz's kids. All right, so
why are
here...
Why are they even listed?
Why are they listed? So we talked about this, I think, 4 years ago, sometime in the 21st century. And we discovered what the whole issue of Chetzron Chamul, which itself is problematic, because if you read this list, and this goes again back to the alternatives, if you read this list as the comprehensive list of everybody who came down, and people who didn't come down aren't listed, and or people who were born later aren't listed, then Chetzron Chamul's presence here is very problematic. Why? Because who are Chetzron and Chamul? They're the sons of Peretz. Who's Peretz? Peretz is the older twin of Yehuda and Tamar.
Yep.
Now you have to remember, just to very quickly do a review on this, Yehuda leaves his brothers ostensibly after Mechirat Yosef. And by the way, there's 22 years total at most between Mechirat Yosef and this point when they come down. And during that time he marries, has 3 kids. There's a gap between kid 2 and 3. It's not just 9 months. It's a gap of a few years. Kid 1 is old enough to marry, die because of his sins. Kid 2 is old enough to do Yibum and not do that right and die because of his sins. And then, remember the story, Yehuda pretends that Shelah is in line, but he's not. When Shelah finally grows up, And Tamar realizes what's happening. She dresses up,
yep,
or dresses down, and Yehuda impregnates her. And 9 months later, Peretz is born, and then Peretz has a kid, Chetzor HaChamul, and those kids come down to Mitzrayim, all within the space of 22 years? I don't think so. That's why the Rabag says the whole story of Yehuda leaving the family happened way before Mechirat Yosef. That's why Kasuto has a whole different take on that, on this list. On this particular item on the list, he says, why do we mention Erev Yonan's death? There's a side point, but part of what we're doing is because the notion is that Yehuda always was supposed to have five batei av, five households. And so therefore, Er and Onan die, so therefore those two households are taken by the next generation. In other words, normally, however many kids you have, that's how many batei av you have. So Levi has three, Gershon, Katan, Merari. Since Yehuda had two kids who died, and their death was never completed, there was no Yibum there, therefore, the great-grandchildren are sort of like the Yavam for their uncle's death, and then there's five batei av, and that's why that has to be mentioned here, which is an interesting insight, but it's going to become problematic when we find the one other exception here with grandchildren. All right.
Have you done the math, by the way, on Aaron and Elisheva? Because Yehuda's line is about six generations more advanced than Levi, if you look at that.
Yehuda's line is six generations.
Elisheva is like six generations removed from Yehuda, whereas Aaron is two generations from Levi. Two or three.
Levi, yeah. Kahatam Ram Aaron. That's right. Not so bad, and they live very long lives.
Versus, well, it depends on how you Yocheved might actually be only one from Levi.
Right.
That would only be two. And then you look at Elisheva, it's like six from Yehuda.
Right. That's not
maybe
weird.
She's 15 and he's
That's
65.
Not weird because you do have marriages of wide range, okay?
I'm just saying the generations are very elastic.
Okay, I'll agree with you there. Yeah. And that's why we can't not nail anything down on these lists.
Right.
Because even the problem I raised with Reuven and Benjamin is not really a problem if it happens that Reuven had four kids and married late, and had the kids late, and Benjamin maybe married young and had a bunch of kids. It's not crazy. It's just each one of these things is a little bit of a problem that says there's something more to this text than meets the eye.
Well, so, I mean, this might be stating the obvious, but it's not a comprehensive list because there are no girls.
On right, we're going to get to that, exactly.
It's impossible,
point.
But they
did not point. Exactly. I have that as question. I didn't put the number of questions. Exactly. No, we have to see about that, where the girls are, exactly. Bnei Yisachar, Tola, Ufuva, Viyov, Shimron. Right? Uvnei Zvulun, Sered, Velon, V'Yachlel. And Yisachar and Zvulun are not disfavored in any way, and yet they also don't get their own mention. So we have to go back and say, okay, Reuven's mentioned uniquely because he's Reuven, he's the Bechor. And then we get a tally, which makes this list look like it's very definitive and very exact and very careful. Because after listing all of the individuals, it says Ela b'nei Leah, Asher Yaladali Yaakov b'fadan Aram, V'yet Dina Vito. All right. So why isn't Dina listed there? And if Dina has kids, why aren't they listed? If Dina doesn't have kids, not married, right? But why isn't Dina listed up there instead of being listed in the comprehensive list? Kol Nefesh Banam Notav Shloshim V'Shalosh. Let's do a little bit of the quick math. Okay. Just count the numbers on the lines. If you could trust me on the numbers or not. Right? 1 and 4 is 5. Another 7 is 12. Another 4 is 16. Another 8 is 24. Right? Another 5 is 29. Another 4 is 30.
33, perfect.
Yeah, except then we get Dina. Except, right. And that's why the 5 on the Yehuda line is a problem. You add Dina in and you get 34, but you got to subtract Aaron Onan and you're down to 32. Mm-hmm. And yet it says that the whole household is 33. This is a well-known question that the 33 are really 32. So, I mean, Torah's a lot better at math than that. Right? Okay. Then, notice we do not go to Rachel, which you would expect. Instead, Uvnei Gad, Tzifyon v'chagi shunim v'etzpon eriv arudiv arili, Uvnei Asher, and this gets weird again, Yimna v'yishva v'yishvi, which sounds like the same person, Uvriya v'serach achotam. Now, why is that weird? Because you're going to tell me that out of somewhere between 53 and 55 grandchildren, that only one of them is a girl. I don't know what that word second is. That only one of them is a girl. Just statistically, just so unlikely. Again, it's not impossible, but it's just very, very unlikely. The fact that Yaakov has maybe, and I'm going to say maybe because the Netziv says maybe, has 13 children of whom only one is a girl is unusual, but not crazy. But this with the grandchildren is very unlikely. I'll tell you why the Netziv actually says maybe not. Interestingly enough, maybe there's actually other kids there. Kids, not grandchildren, kids. Besides the 13 that we know.
Well, let's go back to the point of some stayed behind. It's more likely that the girls who married stayed behind.
If they married Kananim and they stay behind, that would be certainly likely. Although we have to remember, staying behind is not just an immigration option. It's a starvation problem. Because remember, they went down when there were 5 years to go in the famine, and Canaan is directly affected by the famine. That's how the whole story starts. So you could say, okay, the family went down and the family shipped them food, maybe, but there's nothing about it.
Went east or north.
Or they went somewhere else, and then they're gone, they disappeared. Could be.
I guess it was a few years ago where you said that when they went to reconquer the land that the families were already living in certain places.
No, what I mentioned was Rav Yoel Ben-Nun's approach, which is that the city of Shechem had been taken over by Beit Avraham, meaning all the believers who were the followers of Avraham who didn't come down with the family, and therefore there was never a battle for Shechem in Sefer Yoshua, and therefore Yoshua did his recovenanting in Shechem to sort of bring them back into the picture.
But I thought Shevet right. Dan you had talked about.
No, Shevet Dan's a different story. Shevet Dan's a different story. But that the fact that the sons themselves seemed to start staking out their territory while they were alive is pretty much hinted to, I would say not more than hinted to in the text. But the notion that some of the tribes actually made an early incursion in the land is something that's explicit in Divrei HaYamim, and that incursion didn't work very well. And it seems to be hinted to at the end of Parsha Matot, which is Venova Chalach, seems to be referring to an earlier incursion to the Golan, or to the Bashan, by some members of the Shevet Menashe.
I mean, you could say textually that it's telling you about all the people that went down to make you the great nation there, but it doesn't mean that people weren't left behind.
I understand, but I have two large questions about this. One is, who's on the list and who's not on the list? And then the larger question, which I'll ask when we finish. But then, B'nai Rachel, Eshet Yaakov, Yosef Binyamin. Rachel's the only one who gets this treatment. We asked this about Reuven, when Reuven got singled out. Mm-hmm. So far, none of the other sons have been singled out. But notice, Leah, certainly not Zilpah, and not Bilhah, no surprise there, are going to get this sort of treatment, but Rachel gets a headline. B'nai Rachel, Eshet Yaakov, and she's called Eshet Yaakov, Yosef Binyamin. And then, Vayvaleh Yosef Be'eretz Yitzrayim, Asher Yalda Lo Asenat Bat Potifar Koinon, Ed Menashe Bet Ephraim. And there's two big problems with that mention. Problem number one is, you're mentioning who's coming down. Problem number two is, if you want to talk about grandchildren, Machir, Gilad. I mean, Menashe has really important families that play a critical role later on. And it's just Menashe and Ephraim. And the other problem is, these are not people who came down, which the text later owns up to. But these aren't people who came down. These are people who are already there. So this isn't a list of who came down. Is it a list of who ended up there? Then why not mention Menashe and Ephraim's kids? By the way, Yosef, we're told, has great-grandchildren that he raises. Right? Gam b'nei machir ben Menashe yuldu aber ke Yosef. Right? So that would mean that at this point in time, Menashe probably has kids. Well, actually, maybe not, because at this point, Menashe and Ephraim are probably relatively young. Right? Because Yosef's only been in charge for 9 years. So they're probably like little kids. Okay, good. So not that. But nonetheless, if this list is being done from a perspective of time backwards and saying who are the significant members of this family later on, and Menashe and Ephraim should certainly have more. The other problem is, why is Asnat mentioned here? She doesn't count as one of the numbers. She doesn't count for any reason. She's not blood, and she also didn't come down. But she's mentioned. Asher Yaldalo Asnat Bat Potifera Koinon. Right? And all the Yichas. Why is she mentioned here when none of the other wives are mentioned by name? Okay, very strange. And then Rachel gets another piece. Okay, B'nai Binyamin, Belam Avecha Ve'ashpel, Gerivim Naaman Echiv Arosh, Bovim Chubim Va'ard. And again, Binyamin has this whole long list, right? And notice that, again, in the case of Binyamin and Yosef, they get their own mention, just like Reuven did, and then their sons are in a separate psukim. Good, 14. And then, this is weird, Uvnei Dan Chushim. What's weird about that?
But it wouldn't be weird if you read it this way.
Uvnei Dan Chushim.
Meaning,
well, no, no, wait, wait a second. Bnei Dan Chushim.
There's only one son.
Right, so it should be Ben Dan Chushim. We'll see, actually, what the Gemara says about that, what the Midrash says about that. By the way, you notice there's an elegant symmetry here. Is that Leah, if we ignore the problem, Leah has 32 in her household, and Zilpah, her handmaid, has 16. And Rachel has 14 in her household, and Bilhah, her handmaid, has 7. Which is pretty cool. Okay, and comes out to 69, which is a problem number for us, evidently. So the summary is called Nefesh Abali Yaakov Mitzrayim Ayotzei Recho Milvad Neshev Yaakov. So we're told we're not counting the wives. Kol Nefesh Shishim Vashesh. So there's 66 blood descendants of Yaakov who came down to Mitzrayim. Okay, so how do we get 66? So go back to the 32 that we had plus 16. Okay, plus 16 of Zilpah. That's how many? 48. Then there's 11 of Rachel, Binyamin and his sons, right? Which is 59, and 7 of Bilhah, 66.
Yep.
Right? Plus I got Yosef, Menashe, and Ephraim, and my missing 70th. Okay? Uvnei Yosef, Eshir, Lavan, Mitzrayim, Nefesh, Naim. Right? Kol Nefesh, Levet, Yaakov, Abba, Mitzrayim, Ashivim. So, of course, the huge question is, how do we get to 70? That's every famous question. Yep. Right, and the famous Yocheved solution, which is one of many of several solutions that we have. But right, so that's the other famous solution. All right, but the larger problem I want to ask about this, which I didn't put on here, is why do I need this list at all? Like, why do I need this list? If you want to tell me that I need to know that there were only 70, and turn the page and take a look. That there were only 70, and from those 70 grew an amazing nation, which is, of course, Pasuk 5, which we quote in the Midrash and the Haggadah. B'shivim nefesh yadu avotach mitzrayim, atasam chad v'nayvach agrech shemayim narov. Then, just tell me 70 came down. Why do you know the names and the family definitions and one granddaughter and one daughter and who Yosef's wife is without mentioning, without counting her? The whole thing seems sort of hard to figure out. Now, there's another piece which Julie hinted to earlier, actually more than hinted to, pointed to earlier, which if you take a look at source 2 and 3, you almost got to scream Netziv from the heavens, right? Just before our list, the pasuk says, Vayakom Yaakov Ber Shava. This is after Yaakov stops in Ber Shava on his way down and brings Korbanot, and Hashem comes to him and says, I'll be with you, etc. Vayisu b'nei Yisrael Yaakov Avihem. So they took Yaakov in the wagons, sounds very familiar, right? It sounds like Avram. Vayavohu Mitzrayima. Yaakov v'chol zaro ito. Who's that? That sounds like our list. Banav, good. Uvnei vanav ito, sounds like our list. Benotav, who's that?
There's only one.
Right. We seem to have a problem with numbers here, like Bnei Dan Chushim and Benotav. Right?
Could it be Beraso?
What? It would be Bito. Bito, yeah. Right. Uvnot Banav, who's Benot Banav? Serach. Again, problem is, Bat Beno, right? Bechol Zaro, Hebito Mitzrayim. Now, the reality is, you can excuse that. If there really is, and again, the statistics don't work here, but if there is really only one daughter and one granddaughter in this whole mix, you can still say Benotav because you're talking in the generic sense. All right, and that happens in Tanakh all the time. The problem is when you look at source 3, because source 3 is a little bit louder. Source 3 goes way back to Yaakov in Hebron getting a bloody coat, with a message from his sons who are still up in Shechem saying, we found this, please recognize, is this Yosef's coat? Yaakov recognizes, he says, yes, indeed, Yosef must have been torn up by a beast, and he starts mourning. Pasuk 3. Vayakumu chol banav chol banotav lenachamo. What does that mean? So Rashi on the spot quotes two famous midrashim. One very famous midrash, which is that each one of the, and by the way, this one wreaks havoc with our list, if you take this midrash. The one midrash that each one of the sons was born with a
girl
twin. So Reuven and Reuvenette, right? Shimon and Simon, I guess. And so that Kol Banav V'Kol Banotav means, you know, Reuven and Reuven, well, actually, Reuven's not there, but whatever sons are there, maybe Yisachar Zvulun, maybe Gan Asher, maybe Binyamin, come to comfort him, and Binyamina and Yosefa, and, you know, they all come to comfort him. The other one is that Rashi, because Rashi's not comfortable with that, evidently, because he brings another comment, and he says that they all married, and their daughters are there. And by the way, Rashi says, and they all married Kananiot. Well, interesting. Exactly, but notice, he doesn't pick up on, he doesn't drive home the point of saying, because with Shaul ben HaKananit, so there's a midrash that says, oh, because he also went and married this Kananit who's ech, and we don't like that, so he singled her out because all the rest of the women were not Kananiot. Here, he married Kananiot, and Ein Adam Nimna Milchanot et Kalotav Bita Milotav. A person isn't bothered by calling his daughters-in-law daughters, so therefore his daughters come to comfort him. All right, the Netziv will have none of it. The Netziv says, no, the pshita is that Yaakov had a lot more kids. What? Not a lot more kids, but more kids. Right? As a matter of fact, in his comment on Lamed Zion, in the Yosef story, he says, Ayein mashakatavti lahalan, take a look what I said in Perek Mem Vav, which is our parsha. And he says he had more kids. And he doesn't like the idea that they stayed behind. Rather, he says, so who do we list? We listed all the ones who played a significant role. Of course, that's kind of problematic because what significant role did Serach Bar Asher play? What significant role did Elon or Yachla'el play? Right? We don't know. So there are several different ways to go on this. Famously, look at source 9 for a minute at the end, is the Midrash. The very famous Midrash says essentially the following. Have you ever seen somebody hand 66 cups to his friend, then give him another 3 and say, I gave you 70? That's the Midrash. I'll read it for you. It's just fun. It's cute. Rabbi Levi b'shem Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman, the bottom source. Ra'ita mi'amecha adam noten l'chavero shishim v'shisha kosot v'chozer noten lo af shlosha v'monel tam shivim. Right? So which means, how do you have 66 plus 3 equals 70? And they're looking just simply at the words of the psukim, the last two psukim. 66 plus 3 equals 70. So what's the famous solution, Mike? Elazu Yocheved shishlima minyanam shel Yisrael b'mitzrayim. Midrash answer number one is that Yocheved was not born in Israel, and therefore not coming down, but when we got to Mitzrayim, there's suddenly 70 because she's born on the road. Right? What?
The Ephraim and Menashe, same thing?
No, Ephraim and Menashe are born a while before. So they're in Egypt. They're the three. That's three. They're not a problem.
So how can you include Yocheved, and then how can you say Yocheved wasn't included because she...
No, because the total number of Yaakov's kids who are in Egypt when they arrive is 70, including a newborn girl. Now Menashe and Ephraim are there.
So you're saying... So she's not enumerated because she wasn't there, but she's counted in the 70.
Yeah, that's what the Midrash is saying, correct.
Theory, yeah.
Right. So then the Midrash continues with that. And then we have a couple lines down.
It says, believe
it. V'yeshomrim.
She was born about, in Mitzrayim, is what it says here.
Right. Conceived on the way and born in Mitzrayim. V'yeshomrim. Third line from the bottom. Yaakov hishlim imahem et haminyan. Which, by the way, is exactly what both the Rashbam and Ibn Ezra in source 7 and 8 say, is that if you look at the text, and Rashbam says it's pshat, it's mamish pshat, simple pshat. Because if you look at the numbering that gets us to 66, it says, Yotzei Yerach Yaakov, meaning his kids. And in the last pasuk that says 70 says, the entire family was 70. Why? Because you forgot to count Yaakov. He's not Yotzei Yerach Yaakov. He is Yaakov.
But even the opening line...
Right. So the whole thing is Yaakov Anav. Exactly. But when we do the counting, we're counting kids. And the 66 is kids and grandchildren, etc. And then the last line says plus 3. So that means the whole family is 70. Because of course Yaakov. Right? That's the answer they give. And interesting is they accuse the Torah sort of double dipping, right? So Rabbi Yitzchak, Mashal, the Shnei Elgirot Shemelech, the Kumenya of Agustiana. These are two evidently big legions in the Roman army. Shashemelech, Nimneim, Elu, Nimtsu, Shlemim. So they evidently had numbers that were missing one, and then the king counts himself as a member of the legion, they're now full. So it's like, you know, Yaakov gets to make it 70, right? V'yeshu me'akodesh baruch hu ishtim ma'em b'tam inyan. And then the last point in Midrash is God is number 70. which is very interesting. It sort of brings to mind that famous discussion in Masachet Brachot in the 7th Perek, where you have two people and on Shabbat can make a Zimun because Shabbat's number 3. Right? And then of course the Gemara screams, well, it's Shabbat Gavru, is Shabbat a person? But you know, this notion of sort of having a spiritual presence at that point.
Nine men plus the Torah.
What?
Nine men.
Which also doesn't work. Okay, so there's a last Yeshomrim here, which is fascinating for itself, and we're going to come back to another answer. Yeshomrim Chushim Ben Dan Hishlimi Mahanam Taminyan. Right? Why? Because Chushim Ben Dan, the notion is, Chushim maybe was two people. All right? Chushim ben Dan, and that's why it's Bnei Dan Chushim. And against that, we have the famous Torah Tosha Rabbi Meir. We have throughout the Midrash quotes from Rabbi Meir's Torah, including not just Torah, but also Nevi'im. In Rabbi Meir's Torah, there's all sorts of evidently margin notes, which he had, which seemed to be sort of Midrashic. And for instance, what did Hashem make as clothing for Adam and Chava? He made kotnot or. Right? But Torah tells Shomer Meir Katuv Kotnot Or with an Aleph. Clothes of light. Right? There's several other places. As a matter of fact, in one place in Yeshayahu where there's a Nevuah against Duma, in Torah tells Shomer Meir it says Roma. It's about Rome. And so anyhow, here, and it's very famous, but Torah tells Shomer Meir Katuv Uven Dan Chushim. Uben Dan Chushim, meaning Dan had one son, his name is Chushim. So, which goes against the idea that Chushim could count for more than one, but deals with the grammatic problem. Kitzur, we have a big problem in this whole piece. But what seems very clear is the text somehow wants to get us to 70. And whether the 70 is the missing Yocheved, whether the 70 is Yaakov himself, whether the 70 is a quote-unquote rounded number, because you know, like we have with Yirmiyahu saying, "Od shivim shana l'bavel," and it's not exactly 70, right? However one understand it, the text is really intent on getting us to 70. And especially if you add in, and I totally sympathize with what you're suggesting, Jules, that there's a lot more kids who came down and girls who came down and they just weren't counted in this. Plus there's the wives that explicitly said came down and didn't count. And there were other members of the household that weren't counted. That the text wants to get us to 70. So I used to think that the text wanted us to get us to 70 because, and Moshe then highlights, B'shivim nefesh avdu otecha, because Bnei Yisrael are, of course, the core of the world. And because they're shivim umot, therefore we want to have a microcosm of the world that goes into this crucible and there grows into the nation that's going to teach the rest of the world. And it's beautiful and it's fine and it's gorgeous. The only problem is that at no point in Parshat Noach does the Torah ever say, here's the 70 families of the world. We count up, we come to 70. So I think maybe we have to reverse it. We have to look at it from the other perspective, and I have to ask an old question that we ask all the time. We know when this happened. Bnei Yisrael came down to Mitzrayim somewhere plus minus 16th, 17th century BC. Whatever it is, 15th century BC. Okay. But when was this text written? Not then. At least not in the form that we have it. When was this text actually written?
1,000
years
later.
So, Har Sinai to Arvot Moab. Somewhere during Moshe's lifetime, simple pshat of the Torah is it was written in Arvot Moav, as Moshe's about to die, he writes the whole Torah, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him what to write, so he writes it down. But that means that we have to look at the importance of this list from the perspective of the nation that's about to enter the land. Okay. And here there's an emphasis on it being 70. It doesn't say do your own math. It says there's 70. And then Moshe says, B'shivim nefesh. So there's a big emphasis on the 70. Where's that all coming from? Bnei Israel are in the Midbar. Bnei Israel, by the way, remembers this because either it happened to them or it happened to their parents. Bnei Israel and Arvot Moav, either it happened to them or to their parents. And the kvetching has gotten serious. Serious kvetching, which we know how to do. And at some point, Moshe Rabbeinu is about to throw in the towel. What does he do? Comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, if this is what's going to happen, take my life. What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu answer him? Esfali shivarim ish mizignei Yisrael. Asher yadata shehem rashei ha'am uzkenav. Shehem zignei ha'am v'shotrav. Take 70 people that you know are the elders of the people, they're shotrav. I will come and speak to you, and I'm going to spread my ruach on them, and they're going to be your support system. So, in other words, what's the model for leadership in the nation? 70. And what translates halachically from that? Sanhedrin. So now read it back and say, this notion of 70, and here we are at Arvot Moab, and we already know that Moshe Rabbeinu's got these 70 elders who are his support staff, the leadership of the nation. And when we come into the country, 70 is going to be our government, 70 is going to be our leadership. So the Torah is coming and saying, that 70 starts all the way back at the genesis of this nation. That this nation, when it first came down to Mitzrayim, and when it was, if you will, planted in the soil that was going to nurture it, there were 70. Which means we have to now think that at least from the perspective of what the people and Arvot Moav knew, every one of these 70 people was important. Serach Bar Asher played some sort of important role. Dina played some sort of important role. And you're right, there's others that aren't mentioned. Evidently, they just didn't play that role. We don't know what the roles are. We know Kershon, Kahat, and Merari. Those we know. We know Peretz. Boy, do we know Peretz. We know some of them, but a lot of them we don't know, but that doesn't mean that at the time people were not aware of important leadership roles that they had. So I think that we have to posit that the purpose of this list, being in Bereishit, is to tell us, the generation in the desert, that this structure of 70 as the leadership model for the nation is something which is anchored in our oldest history. And the first time that we are actually perceived as more than a family, as more than a tribe, but really as a mini nation. Why is that important? Because every move that's made, and we've done several things about this in the past, every move that's made in the Midbar is always evoking something back from the time of Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Is that Maaseh Avot Siman HaBanim is a hard and fast rule in Torah. Like the Netziv says that Bereishit, that Shemot is called Chumash HaSheni, because all of the things that were created as potential in Bereishit come to actualization in Shemot. Right? The Brit Ben HaBetarim gets acted out, but so many other things get played out. And so now you see this leadership of 70, which from our perspective is a little Parshat Balotcha, from their perspective is our leaders. It's the whole system. So you know what? That has its origins in the very first moment that we're acting as a nation. And that is when we come down to Mitzrayim. Maybe. I don't know.
How does that work with women?
So evidently that may mean that there were several women in that generation, notably Dina and Serach, who had some sort of a leadership role, at least that the people knew about at the time, or a significant enough role in leadership. And that's why they counted. Because again, it's very hard to fathom that this is the whole group. The text says it's not the whole group. Right? But it's very hard to fathom that there's no other children or grandchildren. To think that there's 55 grandchildren, only one is a girl, is just really hard to believe.
What leadership role does Aaron Onan play?
We don't know. And Aaron Onan, again, are removed for Katzon and Chamul. They're the Kasuto point. Yeah. I think it's well taken.
Right. Mm-hmm.